Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the San Diego Performance Academy. San Diego voters will head to the polls on November 19th for a special election for mayor after Bob Filner's resignation. East County Magazine has prepared a nonpartisan voting guide, which highlights the four leading candidates. Our guide includes the key issues identified by each candidate, their major endorsements, and for those who have held office before, voting highlights and backgrounds. Although the office is officially nonpartisan, the San Diego County Republican Party and powerful business interests have thrown their endorsements behind Councilman Kevin Faulkner. The Democratic Party has three Democrats in the race, and the party has endorsed Councilman David Alvarez. Nathan Fletcher was formerly a Republican, but is running as a Democrat. Labor is backing Alvarez and Fletcher, depending on which union. Former City Attorney Mike Aguirre is also a Democrat in the race. He trails in polls, but has proved to be a scrappy debater, drawing attention to some key issues. Will San Diego elect a candidate to continue Mayor Filner's progressive policies and focus on neighborhoods, or a candidate apt to implement policies favorable to big business, labor, or other powerful interests? The city's changing demographics may also come into play as Alvarez seeks to become the city's first Latino mayor. Here are a few more key things you may want to know about the four major contenders. Councilman David Alvarez grew up in Barrio Logan. He has worked as a social worker, after-school teacher, and a liaison to State Senator Denise Ducheney before his election to the City Council. He has drawn support, predictably, from the Latino community. He promises to invest in neighborhoods that have been left behind. His priorities include public safety and roads. Both have deteriorated and need to be invested in, he believes. And he says neighborhoods need to be safer. Both Alvarez and Fletcher say they want to invest in new fire stations and increase firefighting personnel. Alvarez's website also includes a detailed blueprint for San Diego. On the council, Alvarez voted for the Property Value Protection Ordinance that has helped stop decline of foreclosed properties in San Diego. He aims to identify sources of homelessness and seek solutions, he says. Alvarez's major endorsements include the San Diego Imperial County's Labor Council, the Democratic Party, San Diego Unified School District Board of Education President John Lee Evans, California Majority Leader Tony Atkins, Council Members Marty Emerald and Myrtle Cole, former Council Member Donna Fry, and the Chicano Democratic Association of San Diego. Councilman Kevin Faulkner is a former public relations executive who says he places investment in the San Diego Police Department as a high priority. The department has faced cuts in recent years and has a major deficit. He has also said that 9/11 calls must be answered in a timely manner, regardless of where one lives. He has pledged to deal with the gang problem the city has had and to invest in libraries and street services. While serving on the council, Faulkner has voted to replace some public employee pensions, however, with 401k plans, and he pushed the ban on alcohol at city beaches. He is also noted for his support for Prop D, which prevented a tax hike. Faulkner's major endorsements include the San Diego Chamber of Commerce, former Mayor Jerry Sanders, the Republican Party of San Diego, the San Diego County Hotel Motel Association, California Restaurant Association, San Diego Chapter, Council Members Lori Zapp, Mark Kersey, and Scott Sherman. Nathan Fletcher is a former Marine who later served in the California legislature, where he was best known for authoring Chelsea's Law to create stiffer penalties for sexual predators. Fletcher says he intends to invest in public safety, too, and erase the gap in pay for the police department, and also invest in the fire department, including building more stations. He intends to fight to keep companies in San Diego and move our emphasis in life science from number 2 to number 1. He wants to bring back the industrial park in Otay Mesa for manufacturing jobs and touts a 21st century jobs plan with plans to export products produced in San Diego. He also called for investment in libraries and city services. Vote Smart has highlights of Fletcher's voting record from his years in the California Assembly, as well as various interest group ratings that you can find on our site at eastcountymagazine.org. Fletcher's major endorsements include the California Small Business Association, Governor Jerry Brown, the San Diego Police Officers Union, Firefighters Union, State Superintendent of Instruction Tom Torlakson, and Assembly Speaker John Perez. Fletcher has been a target of attack ads accusing him of switching views on issues from pension reforms to labor concerns, and for previously quoting the Tea Party with anti-immigrant rhetoric. Mike Aguirre served as San Diego City Attorney in 2004. While in office, he says he saved the city $250 million on legal cases. After he left office in 2008, he has served as a consumer lawyer, battling SDG&E on issues ranging from rate hikes to representing wildfire survivors who are suing the utility. During his launch announcement, Aguirre promised to work on a plan for energy in San Diego, which he sees as mission critical. He supports creation of an energy cooperative to provide consumers with an alternative to SDG&E. He has also promised to develop water sources for the city and promised water independence. Aguirre has been vocal on the need for pension reforms as well, noting that pension spending is now higher than spending on fire protection for the city and continuing to grow every year. Aguirre has been endorsed by La Prensa, a Latino newspaper. You can find links to this information as well as websites for all candidates on our site, www.eastcountymagazine.org, where we also have a link to the Registrar of Voters, where you can find information on several lesser-known candidates who are also in this race. The election, again, is November 19th for the San Diego mayor. This is Miriam Raftery again with East County Magazine, and now we're here with John Mattis. John is a political reporter and consumer affairs reporter, and he is here to give us his take on the San Diego mayor's race. Welcome, John.
Thank you.
Let's start with the political ads that we're seeing. Which candidates are advertising, and how accurate and fair are those ads?
Well, I think let's start out by saying the ads and the campaigns I see as a big disappointment for San Diego voters. I think voters deserve to be engaged in a conversation about what impacts their lives. And sadly, the ads and the campaigns have failed on that note.
Can you give us some examples?
Sure. When you have an ad that says, I'm going to fill potholes. Well, if that ad is being presented by a person who's been in office, you might say, what took you so long to fill all those potholes? And why are you now only talking about filling potholes? Why weren't you talking about that when people's cars are getting beat up by the potholes here in San Diego? Another candidate tells us, he's all for good jobs for good people. Well,
who isn't?
Who isn't? A third candidate tells us he's the only candidate born and raised in San Diego. Well, frankly, when I'm electing a mayor, I don't care where you're born. I care about what you do for me. And so that's the level of the ads we've seen. Frankly, they've been shallow. And they haven't really spoken to what are the needs of San Diego residents.
Good point. Nor are they really showing us any clear differences between the candidates. A lot of them are saying the same thing.
Well, frankly, when I see a Democrat, and I won't name names, saying one of his campaign ads and one of his campaign platforms is he's going to cut waste and balance the budget. Frankly, I've never seen a Republican who didn't say that. And this is a Democrat saying it. So what's the difference?
Yeah, and it should be noted that the city charter requires a balanced budget, so this is something they all have to do. Now, what about ads that are just flat-out deceptive, not just bland, but flat-out deceptive? I understand there's been a few of those, too.
There have been, and one of the most cynical ones is one that attacks one candidate for being so conservative, attacks him for being a friend of Karl Rove and being anti-welfare. Well, the ad is being sponsored by the Lincoln Club of San Diego, one of the most conservative Republican clubs in San Diego.
Yeah.
This is a bunch of corporate Republicans attacking someone for being a friend of Karl Rove, when in fact...
Yeah, let's be clear. These are people that support, I believe they've endorsed Faulkner, the Republican in the race, and they're attacking Nathan Fletcher, that used to be a Republican who's now a Democrat, but not endorsed by the Democratic Party.
Again, so cynical. Why not be honest? Why not say we're conservatives and we're backing a conservative? Instead of attacking...
Making it sound like the Lincoln Club is suddenly
some liberal Planned Parenthood organization that supports welfare rights and immigration reform.
There you go.
I don't think so. So, again, disappointing, and I think it's going to reflect in the numbers of people that vote, because people get turned off by that kind of pandering.
Yeah. What issues do you think should be brought out, if any, that are not being talked about on the campaign trail?
Well, I think the city infrastructure. The city's forgetting the potholes, which we see every day.
Yeah, which two of them have been on the council and had a chance to address, presumably.
What about the water main breaks? What about the infrastructure that we've neglected? The polite term that politicians use is deferred maintenance. That means you don't fix your broken down system so that we have water main breaks that cost us all hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars every time they occur, and they occur weekly, all over. So you've got issues of infrastructure, and then you have the fundamental question of how do we pay for it?
Good question.
Have you heard a single candidate so much as utter the word revenue?
Yeah, they all seem to have ideas of let's spend more, but they all say they don't want to raise taxes, so how do you do that?
and then none of them want to take on the special interest, the special interest that gets special leases, that gets special projects, that gets special tax breaks year in, year out. Not a single politician, not a single candidate has stood up and said, you know what? I'm going to honestly find revenue. I'm going to honestly fill the potholes, and I'm going to honestly find a way to pay for it. Voters aren't dumb. Don't suggest to voters that they're too stupid to get it. And that's why I don't think we're going to see a huge turnout.
Interesting. Now, Mike Aguirre has taken on SDG&E, which certainly is a special interest. He might be the one exception I can think of to that.
Yes. Mike Aguirre has positioned himself as taking on an issue that cuts across party lines. It cuts across demographic lines. Everybody in San Diego County has got an increased utility bill based on the fact that San Diego Gas and Electric thinks that they can bill us for their mistakes at San Onofre. And fundamentally, I think that Mr. Aguirre has tapped a sentiment there. Unfortunately, Mr. Aguirre's campaign is underfunded, and he has the baggage of being a very scrappy city attorney that was voted out of office.
Yeah, you know, on the one hand, liberal voters say that they want to continue the progressive policies of Mayor Filner, but on the other hand, they don't want somebody who's scrappy and combative like Mayor Filner was. Obviously, he had other issues with the sexual harassment. So in Mike Aguirre, so Mike has been going around on the campaign trail saying, I'm going to be nice. I've reformed my personality. I'm going to be this nice, sweet, you know, kind of guy. And I'm not sure if anyone's buying that.
No. And I think that sadly, his campaign has been underfunded. And because of his past with the unions, and let's not factor out the unions. The unions in this race have been the potent force.
Yeah, he's stood up to special interests on both sides of the aisle, both business and labor, which kind of can be a kiss of death for a politician.
Kind of cut him out of the picture, didn't it?
Yeah.
Though, I mean, if we look at his track record as city attorney, I think we see when he talked about pension and the pension crisis and the problems with public pensions, I think that he was really the canary in the mine when we look at cities all over the country.
Correct.
So I think to his credit, he raised those issues. But, of course, he alienated huge groups and important groups in our city,
Right. Namely
public employees and big business.
There you go. Now, another factor we haven't talked about yet is the rising influence of minorities. San Diego's demographics have changed dramatically in the last few years, and now we've got Alvarez running as the first candidate striving to be a Latino mayor. To what degree do you think that Latinos and perhaps other minorities might coalesce around that idea and come out perhaps in support as much as we saw, say, in the Obama election that was rather transformative?
I think the conventional wisdom is that the Latino Hispanic vote would coalesce around Alvarez. But again, you need to speak to the community and you need to speak to them about what impacts their daily life. So to couch your campaign in terms of balancing budgets and cutting waste, I don't think will galvanize. Now, again, it remains to be seen. It is an emerging demographic that is going to shift the voting trends here in San Diego. I think it's too early to tell whether in this particular race it will have a dramatic impact.
Now, the way this works, it's a special election, and if one candidate gets 51%, it's over. If nobody gets that magic, actually 50% plus one vote, then it goes to a runoff between the top two. So to what degree do you think we're seeing a strategy of candidates trying to pick out what they would perceive as the stronger opponent to go after in the primary and knock them out?
Well, certainly the Faulkner campaign would like David Alvarez as an opponent, and I think that's clear in the way they're positioned their advertising and their media campaigns.
And why is that?
Well, I think cynically they see him as a weaker candidate. Nathan Fletcher has union support and has independent support and is seen as a formidable opponent. So Faulkner would rather have Alvarez. I don't think he would ever say that, but I think that if you look at the way his advertising is done and you look at the Lincoln Club, they're clearly attacking Fletcher, trying to keep his numbers down and David Alvarez's numbers up so that they can have a runoff with Alvarez.
Yeah, and on the left, we've tended to see more galvanization around the Alvarez campaign and pretty well ignoring Mike Aguirre, the former city attorney, because they perceive Alvarez as maybe being more winnable, not necessarily stronger, but more winnable.
And again, that's when you look at the way the dynamics of the race. You look at how the power brokers, the party, the special interest, big union, the Democratic Party, and again, the business interests and how they are sort of strategizing and positioning their candidates, leaving Mike Aguirre out on the sidelines.
Well, then Nathan Fletcher may also be in a tough, I would say he's arguably in the toughest spot in this race, other than perhaps Aguirre, because he's being attacked by both the left and the right. There have been ads, a Halloween ad, you know, likening people who voted for him to zombies who don't see that he's changed and flip-flopped on a number of issues. What do you make of that?
Well, I'm not going to cry and shed a lot of tears for Nathan Fletcher. Here's an individual who landed quite well on his feet working for Qualcomm at, if you believe it, $400,000 a year doing something. We're not quite sure what he does there, but he's doing something at Qualcomm, and he's got the backing of the Jacobs family.
So he was pushing forward the whole Balboa Park remodel plan that was so controversial. Interesting.
And what's interesting, if you look at Jacobs' funding of candidates over the years, one of the major backers of Barack Obama. So you say here is a perceived liberal Democrat backing a moderate Democrat in the face of Nathan Fletcher. So it's an evolving situation.
Yeah, he's voted conservatively on many issues through the years, but he has bucked his party on a few things, gay rights being a notable example of that in recent years.
So you look at Nathan Fletcher's past and you say, has he evolved? Is this an evolution based on political expediency? Or is he growing up and seeing a more world view? We don't know. And again, I think that's going to be for voters and the future to determine whether or not he evolved based on political strategy or, in fact, he really does change in his own heart.
Yeah, very interesting. We also see a couple of these large moneyed candidates, people who've come from positions of wealth and privilege, military backgrounds in the case of Nathan Fletcher versus Alvarez, who comes out of the Barrio Logan. So very different kinds of backgrounds for the candidates as well.
Exactly. But let's level the playing field. They've all got a lot of money. The Alvarez campaign has way over a million. In fact, apparently, according to recent reports, has the most money. The Faulkner campaign running a tight second. And again, Nathan Fletcher, we're not going to see exactly all of the expenditure because a lot of this is hidden.
Have you looked at the donations? Where is the big money coming from in this race?
Well, the big money, big labor, big business. And really, you can boil this race down to big labor backing Alvarez, big business backing Faulkner, and independent money, i.e. Jacobs money, backing Nathan Fletcher. And it really boils down to those three.
Yeah, very, very interesting. John, thank you so much for sharing your words of wisdom with us on the San Diego mayoral race. We appreciate you joining us today on the East County Magazine Show.
Thank you.
This is a special announcement from the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts.
This is Isaac Rodriguez with a high wind warning alert. A high wind warning for mountain and desert areas in East County has been issued by the National Weather Service. The warning remains in effect until Sunday morning at 7 a.m. Winds of 35 miles per hour are expected with potentially stronger gusts. There is also a chance of light rain west of the mountains. Use caution when driving, particularly with high-profile vehicles. Blowing dust could cause reduced visibility in desert areas.
VIEJAS Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the VIEJAS Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
For the past 8 years, the Alpine Women's Club has sponsored its Christmas in Alpine home tour. However, this year, the group has only one house for its tour and is seeking additional homes to showcase in Alpine. The fundraiser helps to provide scholarships that the club gives away each year. Since 1950, the Alpine Women's Club has given away more than $95,000 to exceptional Alpine graduating seniors, said Carla Anderson, president of the Alpine Women's Club. She added, "We are reaching out to the community and looking for Alpine residents who love to decorate for the holidays and would enjoy sharing their decorating skills with others." The event is scheduled for Saturday, December 14th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. If you are interested in being part of this festive event, you will also be invited to the club's Christmas party starting at 3 p.m. at the Alpine Women's Club located in historic Town Hall building. There will be food, refreshments, and surprises. For more information, contact Carlett Anderson at 445-2055 extension 11 or email the Alpine Women's Club at AOL.com.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording from the San Diego Performance Academy. And I'm here today with Jerry Dean. Jerry is the founder of Missing Persons of America. She also hosts the Missing segment that you've heard on our show. And she has been following the case for several years now of the missing McStay family from Fallbrook here in San Diego. And, Jerry, I understand there's some very tragic breaking news today about the case. Can you please tell us the latest?
Yes. Well, four bodies were found in Victorville. They weren't sure who the identity was, and then late last night, we've heard that they probably were the McStay family. I spoke to Patrick McStay, who is Joseph's father, and he told me around 7 o'clock last night that he had heard through a family member that the bodies were of the McStay family. Patrick is the father of Joseph McStay, and he told me that he had heard from his family member that they had found Summer and Joey in Victorville, and they were waiting for confirmation whether Gianni and little Joseph was also there.
These were their very young children that were with them when they vanished back in February of 2010. Now, this morning, the San Bernardino sheriff, I understand, has come out and said that the bodies are believed to be those of the children, but they're waiting on a coroner or medical examiner confirmation to be certain on that. Were you surprised, and was Patrick, the family member, surprised that the bodies turned up and that they were all the way in Victorville, 100 miles or so north of where they vanished, given that the sheriff had concluded, I understand, that they believed the family had vanished voluntarily? And that was based on a videotape that showed them, or someone resembling them, crossing the border, and later their vehicle found parked in San Ysidro near the border.
Yeah. I know Patrick, I don't believe, was surprised. He always suspected it was foul play. I was surprised. I actually thought that there was a good possibility they had gone to Mexico and they were still alive. I'd had no real confirmation of that, or no, it was just a feeling that I had that they probably, that's where they went. And it probably was a hope that that's where they went, because I certainly didn't want to find out a tragic ending like this one here.
Why did Patrick believe that they had fallen prey to foul play?
He had a lot of reasons that he believed that. He did a whole list of reasons why he believed. One was that Summer would not have left the dog behind, would not have left the dog in the backyard without any water or the running out of food. The place wouldn't be left the way it was. They had left the house the time that Joey and Gianni would have gone to bed. That didn't make sense to him. There was a number of reasons.
Didn't make sense. I understand that there was a ping on Joey's cell phone shortly after they went missing and that it was nowhere near the border. Tell me about that.
It was on the Bonsall Bridge. They had a ping.
Which is north of Fallbrook. So why would the sheriff conclude they must be in Mexico if the last ping on the cell phone after they left was north of where they were last seen?
I don't know. I don't think that enough research had been done on that cell phone ping. I knew there was no search done in that area. Mm-hmm. And there was also some volunteers that came forward and said they were willing to go search in that area, but they were denied access to that area.
So the sheriff never conducted a search? There was no search done in that area?
No, there was no search done in that area.
Do we know, now I understand per what Patrick said, that there had been a threat at one point against Summer and that there also had been some money that had gone missing from their account that was not taken out by the McStays. What can you tell me about any of that?
Right. There were several withdrawals over a period of several days and then into a week from Joey's account. And Patrick himself knew who was taking the money out, although it hasn't come out publicly, but he knew who was taking the money out, and he actually went over to the bank to talk to them to get them to put a stop on any more withdrawals since his family was missing, and Joey was not the one taking it out.
So this was after they were gone.
Yes.
There was an individual, he knew the name, and he knew someone was taking money out.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And was this person ever considered a person of interest? Was there any search of his premises? Was this person ever followed, a tail put on them by the sheriff to try to find out whether they were involved in more than taking money?
Not that I knew of. I've never heard anything out there in social media or any information personally that they ever did any follow-up on that lead. I do know that Patrick did give him the name, and where that went from there, I do not know.
Do we know if that individual had any ties to the San Bernardino or Victorville area where these bodies were ultimately found?
Good question. I have to do the research on that. I'm not sure at this time.
The money that was disappearing from the account, Jerry, do we know how it got there, how they had earned this money or where it came from?
Well, from the research that I have done, some of the money came from a house that Summer had sold a few years back, and the rest of it was from Joey's business of selling waterfalls.
So this was all very legitimate, very above board. Sounds like, you know, the all-American family that just vanished. This is probably a pretty unusual case for an entire family to go missing.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I was saying.
Usually it's one person or a...
Or even two.
Or a couple,
if you have
maybe
two, that's unusual. Three is usually some kind of abduction, and then they turn up later. But for four people, that's really, really different. And then for four people to be found, buried together, you know, you could do a Google search on that, and you're going to come up with zip, you know. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But I thought at the beginning, maybe it was many illegal aliens that had died, and then they put them out there and covered them up. But so it turns out it wasn't that.
I understand the bodies were found in a desert area. It was a very shallow grave, and they were found by apparently a motorcyclist or off-roader who discovered them. Do we have any details yet on cause of death or something that might shed any more light into what occurred?
The sheriff's department announced that it was a homicide, but the cause has not been released as yet.
There had been all kinds of speculation on social media and in various media accounts about what could have possibly occurred with this family. Some of the speculation had been that, you know, perhaps they themselves had somehow been involved in something that was illegal. Did anyone ever have any evidence about that, that either Summer or Joey could have fallen in with a bad crowd, been involved in anything where there could have been reason to believe someone would want to retaliate against them in this manner?
There were a lot of rumors that there might have been drug or real estate transaction that went bad, but nothing has been founded. Mm-hmm. It was just a normal family that just moved into a new home and were living their life, and then suddenly something happened on February 4th and they were gone.
Yeah. And they were not poor. They were not in financial trouble. I understand there was quite a bit of money that they had in the bank, been saving hard. They had kids in school, like you say, pets that were unattended for. So it was really a huge, huge mystery. What lessons can be drawn for this for families of other people who might be missing? Jerry, you certainly deal with a lot of these kind of cases. If something just doesn't feel right, if it looks like the law enforcement may not be perhaps pursuing every lead, what else can a family do?
They can hire a private investigator.
Was that done by the McStay family, do you know?
I did have a private investigator get in touch with Patrick, and he did do some research on it, and he was also led back to the Bonsall Bridge because of the cell phone ping.
Oh, because of it.
Mm-hmm. He wanted to know why there was no search done in that area, and he was talking with the police department, the sheriff's department, to find out when they're going to do a search over that area, and nothing came of that.
Interesting. You would think there might be freeway surveillance cameras that could be checked, all kinds of other things. Mm-hmm. If people want to follow more about this case as it unfolds, and certainly there's bound to be more information coming out in the coming days, can you give us your website where they can find past articles on the case and anything new that you'll be posting as the events unfold?
You can go to missingpersonsofamerica.com, and up on the search box, you can type in the McStay, and you'll see all the articles I've written, and you'll be able to follow it along as the information comes to me. I will share it with my followers.
Thank you very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show, Jerry. We certainly appreciate your insights and experience.
Thank you.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. As we approach the holidays this year, we'll be bringing you holiday events in our preview section at the end of Destination East County, starting today. But right now, we want to announce a little-known secret in East County. Each holiday season and winter, skaters and non-skaters can enjoy the outdoor ice skating rink at Viejas Outlet Centers in Alpine. Larger than the famed Rockefeller Center rink in New York and reminiscent of it, the Viejas Outlet Center's rink is also the largest in Southern California. Guests can enjoy shopping, holiday decor and entertainment, and then skate, sip hot cocoa or order off a rinkside menu. The rink is now open throughout the holiday season. If skaters bring a new unwrapped toy worth $5 or more by December 4th for the East County Toy Drive, they can get a discount on skating prices. Favorite Disney characters will appear at Young Actors Theater on Campo Road in Spring Valley this weekend, where Aladdin Jr., a stage adaptation of the Disney hit film, is being performed. The production is filled with magic, mayhem, and flying carpet rides, along with the Academy Award-winning score, which includes the songs A Whole New World and Friend Like Me. The Olaf Weghorst Museum in downtown El Cajon on Rhea Avenue will be presenting a guest lecturer on Thursday, November 14th at 6:30 p.m. Mark Fellman will speak on Capturing San Diego's Nature, 100 Years of Landscape Painting. Currently, the California Art Club and Olaf Weghorst Museum are hosting a juried art show that began in October and continues through January 11th at the museum. Enjoy a harvest moon dance in Dulzura on Saturday, November 16th from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. Everyone is invited to dance by the light of the moon at Camps Grove in Dulzura. The Dulzura Community Development Committee and Dulzura Barrett Fire Department are hosting this dance and barbecue benefit event, which is for adults 21 and older. Barbecue dinners, including barbecue meat sandwiches, coleslaw, and chips may be purchased. Camps Grove is located on Highway 94 in Dulzura. The Cameron Highlanders Pipe Band of San Diego County is having its 65th annual Tartan Ball on Saturday, November 6th at the Hall of Champions in Balboa Park. The Camerons have a long history, being one of the oldest continuously competing bands on the West Coast. The group offers free bagpiping and drumming lessons at Helix High School every Wednesday from 7 to 9 p.m. They are always on the lookout for new guests to join them for an evening of bagpiping, singing, dinner, and Highland dancing, according to Robert Islis, Jr. The Tartan Ball is the pipe band's biggest fundraiser of the year. You Missed is a new comedy program packed with humor, lots of strange stories from around the world, political perspectives from the right, left, and people that just don't give a darn. You Missed is recording live at the Space Bar in La Mesa on Sunday nights from 6 to 7 p.m. The show will air right here on KNSJ 89.1 Community Radio, networking for social justice at a future date. There are autumn adventures in the Anza Borrego Desert. Autumn nights are ideal for several special upcoming experiences, ranging from a classical guitar concert by moonlight in the Red Rock Canyon area to two overnight campouts for stargazers, including a chance to view an upcoming meteor shower and the spectacular comet Ison. Hosted by California Overland Desert Excursions, the first event happens this weekend, and then we will have a preview of their upcoming events throughout November and December. Classical Guitar Under the Moon is an evening with musician Michael McCormick on Friday, November 15th. This memorable music, enhanced by the natural acoustics, a beautiful Hawk Canyon, and a chuck wagon dinner. Camp Beneath the Stars, astronomer Scott Baker will host this event on Saturday, November 23rd. Fall camping is idyllic in the Anza Borrego Desert, especially when you're in the company of an astronomer and his telescope. Chuck wagon dinner will also be provided. And you can enjoy the upcoming meteor shower overnight and maybe spy the comet on Friday, December 13th. Viewing the starry skies with professional astronomer and famed night sky photographer Dennis Mamana. The annual Geminids meteor shower should be better than average this year. Back in town, and some would say back to reality, the Lamplighters Community Theater presents a staged reading of Hot Flashes, the comedy. Curtain times are 7:30 p.m., Friday, November 22nd, and Saturday, November 23rd, with a matinee at 2 p.m. on Sunday, November 24th. If you are looking for a place to do some early holiday shopping, Descanso is hosting an Arts and Crafts Fair next Saturday on November 23rd from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's at the Descanso Town Hall in Descanso, California, where shoppers can enjoy free refreshments, listen to some wonderful live music, and purchase handcrafted items, all while taking in the fresh mountain air along with a little backcountry hospitality. Fusion Glass Gallery and Studio is hosting its annual holiday show and 10th anniversary party on Saturday, November 30th at 7 p.m. on La Mesa Boulevard in La Mesa. Guests can enjoy a bounty of beautiful artworks by a bevy of talented local artists while feasting on appetizers, sipping wines and beers, and savoring a champagne toast. The jazz style of local musician Bo Downey will be performed, and there will be a photo booth just for fun. The dress theme for the evening is sparkles. The Mother Goose Parade will be held for the 67th time on Sunday, November 24th in downtown El Cajon. The parade begins at 10 a.m. at the corner of East Main Street and Magnolia Avenue, continuing eastbound on East Main Street all the way to 2nd Street. Enjoy marching bands, local dignitaries, and parade floats. After the parade, spectators can stop by the Mother Goose Village at the Prescott Promenade for more fun activities. Waddle and Trot 5K is a new East County Thanksgiving tradition. On Thursday, November 28th at 8 a.m., Pathways Community Church will be hosting the second annual Waddle and Trot 5K and Fun Run. This fun family event is intended for runners and walkers of every fitness level, and all proceeds will go to Santee Santas and the Santee Food Bank. Race participants will begin in the Pathways Center at the corner of Mast and Carlton Hills. The course is described as flat and fast. A post-race celebration includes refreshments and vendor booths, as well as prizes for the fastest runners. A fun run is planned for kids age 10 and under and kicks off at 9 a.m. within the Pathways parking lot. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section at www.eastcountymagazine.org. See you around, East County!
Country of origin labeling, or COOL, requires labels on meat sold in the U.S. to clearly state where that meat comes from. It's not sitting well with some foreign countries, along with groups in the U.S. who are working to get the rule squashed. Joe Maxwell is with the Humane Society of the United States. His organization has helped form a coalition to try to keep the law in place. As a livestock farmer, Maxwell says this should be a major concern for consumers and farmers alike, as some countries do not have health and safety rules for raising animals, and meat processing standards are lower.
As we've seen recently with the USDA accepting certain country standards, even though those standards are less than the United States, clearly indicates that a consumer should have the right to know where that animal was raised and how it was processed and how it wound up being in that meat counter.
Maxwell says the USDA recently changed its rules allowing chickens raised in the U.S. to be sent to China to be processed and brought back here to be sold. He says if COOL is overturned, the American consumer will be kept in the dark about the origins of all meat. He says the list of those working to overturn COOL include foreign countries such as Canada and U.S. groups, including the National Pork Producers Council and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. He adds the push for cheap meat has come at a heavy price for animal welfare and for small farmers.
The policy that we have has driven off the land over 1 million farmers in the last 35 to 40 years. It's caged and crated and put into extreme confinement almost 9 billion animals.
The Humane Society of the United States, along with Organization for Competitive Markets, United Farm Workers of America, American Grass-Fed Association, and three independent family-owned livestock farms, filed a brief supporting COOL in a federal appeals court in Washington, D.C. For Public News Service, I'm Monique Coppola.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing award-winning author and East County native Peggy Lang. My guest writes, ghost writes, and or edits most anything from web copy to general nonfiction to memoirs, novels, and screenplays. Welcome, Peggy. It's a pleasure talking with you.
It's great to be here.
Let's begin with your most recent book, Assassin's Game, which was co-authored with Governor Dan Walker, and it won Best Action Suspense Thriller at this year's San Diego Book Awards. What was that project like for you, and how did you come to collaborate with the governor?
We had collaborated on his memoirs earlier, The Maverick and the Machine. He was a rebellious governor in rebelling against the Chicago machine politics under the Daley administration. And so we did that book together, which also won an award. And then he came up with this fiction idea and asked me to critique it. And I said, well, here's what you should do. And he said, well, I don't want to do that. How about if you do it? Oh. So eventually we went back and forth and decided to collaborate on it.
And so did you enjoy that process? Was it different collaborating with a governor versus another writer?
It was different collaborating with the governor. I absolutely love Dan. He's a dear, dear friend. But he has this governor gubernatorial authority about him that I found it a little bit difficult to work around. Yeah.
But you worked through it.
We do. And we still have arguments, but oh well, we get through. And we understand that that's part of our process, so it's okay.
Great. Well, I know that you've ghost authored and ghost co-authored quite a few other books, including an award-winning memoir in 2007, and more recently a novel called Hearts on the Line. I've talked about this before in here, but what is your experience as a quote-unquote ghost, and is it something that has added to your writing and editing skills? I mean, what's ghosting like for you?
I love ghosting.
Really?
Yes, I do. As a writer, we are very isolated and spend enormous amounts of time alone, concentrating in front of a computer. And so one could easily just turn into a little hermit type of a person. And so for me, being a ghostwriter is a chance to collaborate with a number of different people. And I've mm-hmm. gotten very, very close to the people I collaborate mm-hmm. with. And it's enriched my life. It has stretched me as a writer enormously.
Really?
I feel like I can just about take on anything at this point because I've done so many different types of things. Yes, I find it very worthwhile. I am ready to get into my own stuff, though. Sure. I think I'm sort of veering in that direction a little bit.
Is it at all difficult to not have your name on the work that you've done, or is that just part of the...
You know, it was something I had to get over on the first, on that memoir that I mentioned with the governor. Mm-hmm. We sold it to SIU Press, and I had it in my contract, Southern Illinois University Press, and I had it in my contract that I was going to have a byline on the cover. And the editor said, well, I can't sell this book with your name on it. Everybody will think you wrote it. And he said, listen, editors get shafted all the time. And I was more than an editor. I was truly a co-author. But
right.
Okie dokie then. I would never get in the way of a project. So I just decided I can do this. I can just be in the background, and that's okay. You know, Colin Powell said, it's amazing what you can get done as long as you don't have to take credit for everything. And so I thought...
That's a really interesting perspective.
Yeah, so and that's been true for me. I've gotten so many projects now since I don't have to have my name on it.
Yeah, so there are so many riches that it compensates for the...
Absolutely. For me, it does.
Well, I know you're an active member of the writing community. You teach at UCSD, the La Jolla Writers Conference, and other places. What is it about teaching that draws you as opposed to the writing, ghostwriting? Would you call it just more stable work, or is it another labor of love?
It's a little bit of both. I rely on the classes at UCSD Extension to pay my property taxes, for example. But I love the process. Sometimes it leads to collaborations. Other times it leads to people that I bring into the writers' groups that I'm in. Teaching has also caused me to be very focused on what I'm trying to get across,
right,
which forces me to understand it better, and which enables me to use it better than when I'm writing. So it's kind of a win-win process.
So listening to you, I see it's all an interconnected web, really.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and I love being around writers. I don't know, there's something about people who write, and it's like a wanting to communicate with your fellow human being in a heightened kind of way. Mm-hmm. And I just find that exciting.
Great. So what's your most exciting project? And what
a past exciting project was getting to work on this rock opera. I had never done anything like that. I had worked on screenplays, but... never a rock opera. I was working with some very brilliant musicians, but they didn't quite have their story. Well, we worked on the script, and they didn't understand how to dramatize the things they were trying to get across from their music. And so we helped them with that. That was a very exciting and fun project.
So where is that rock opera? Is it being produced somewhere? Or
They had produced it in another country, and then they were in a different language, actually.
Right. Well, then one last question, Peggy. What are you working on now with your name? And could you share a little bit about your routine or your writing process? I mean, what works best for you when you either have a deadline or give yourself a deadline?
I like deadlines, and I often have to give myself deadlines. That's a big part. But basically, I write every single day, almost. At least, and maybe not all day, but for some of the day. And so I have to get some exercise in, otherwise my brain atrophies. I'm excited right now. One of my writing partners, Marla Martinson, who did the Hearts on the Line, I did that with her as a ghost. We are now writing with my name on it on a partnership basis, a screenplay, which we just got a manager for, which is similar to an agent,
right,
who plans to market it as a pilot for a TV series.
Oh, how exciting.
And so I am excited about that. That feels fun. And I have another book with the governor on corruption, and then I have a book that I'm doing on leadership, which takes the standpoint that what if the soul is the most important element of leadership, and it's for the Hansen Foundation, who has brought in some 33 women peacemakers to San Diego, USD, the Joan Kroc Center for Peace and Justice. And so I'm mostly writing up their stories, but from this particular slant, because these are amazingly dedicated, beautiful, spirited women, and it's really exciting and a pleasure to write about them.
It sounds like a good time for that.
Yeah.
In the world.
What the world needs now.
Yes. Well, Peggy, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Raina. It's been a pleasure.
For more information on Peggy Lang, please visit our website at www.peggylang.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is a special announcement from the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts.
This is Isaac Rodriguez with a high wind warning alert. A high wind warning for mountain and desert areas in East County has been issued by the National Weather Service. The warning remains in effect until Sunday morning at 7 a.m. Winds of 35 miles per hour are expected with potentially stronger gusts. There is also a chance of light rain west of the mountains. Use caution when driving, particularly with high-profile vehicles. Blowing dust could cause reduced visibility in desert areas.
The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. Here's some good news for local veterans. During November, veterans and active duty military personnel can adopt a dog or a cat at half price through County Animal Services. This includes spaying or neutering, vaccinations, a microchip, and a free health examination. The adoptions are limited to one dog or two cats per household. Don Danielson, director of the county's Department of Animal Services, says this is a win-win situation for both pets and vets. The pets get a loving home, and service members will gain a loyal forever companion. Pets can often have healing effects on veterans and help them transition back into their civilian lives, she added. The county animal shelters are located in Bonita, San Diego, and Carlsbad. In addition to 50% off adoption fees at county shelters, a free one-year dog license is also available to veterans who live in the unincorporated areas of the county or in certain cities, including Santee, San Diego, and several coastal communities.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Maness of the Maness Vineyards Estate.
That's Greg Maness from Maness Vineyards here on East County Magazine Live. And we're going to introduce you to another very informative and what I feel is a very affluential person in the wine and vines industry movement. Ladies and gentlemen, Don Rutkoff. Don, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Greg. Happy to be here.
Give our listeners a little story of what your life's all about.
Okay, I'm originally from the East Coast and moved to California like many people did, seeking fame and fortune in the early 1980s. And I lived in San Diego for a while, got a degree in finance from San Diego State University. I moved up to the San Francisco area and I got an MBA from San Francisco State University. And I worked for Bank of America for about 10 years doing budgets and financial analysis and risk management. I liked wine and I thought, you know, I'm here in the Bay Area. Napa's not that far away. So why don't I see if I can go to work in the wine industry?
Now, did you do some specialty schooling and training in viticulture and AVA?
Yes, I was able to go back to school, and I took some of the seminars that they offer at UC Davis on sensory analysis and chemical composition of wine, and then I went to school in the classes at Napa Valley College. It owns 2 5-acre vineyards in the heart of Napa. We used to grow and sell grapes to Stag's Leap wine cellars, and the school offers 3 different AA degrees and about 30 or 35 different courses in the wine industry. So it's a very extensive program.
So you got a lot of information and a lot of training out of that. You have started a new career down here and got some of the colleges kind of buzzing. Can you tell us a little bit about where you're teaching these college-level classes about vines and the wines movements and the new ordinances?
Well, 2 years after moving here, I wanted to get a little bit more work under my belt, get more hours, and I thought, you know, San Diego looks like a pretty good place to grow, and it certainly is a place where people are drinking a lot of wine, and we have a big hospitality industry. So I called up my friend Steve, who runs the wine program at Napa College, and I asked him what he thought about the idea of taking some of the classes and transplanting them and using them down here, and he said it was an absolutely great idea. So I started sending emails and making phone calls to the four-year colleges, but especially all the community colleges, in the hospitality programs, in the science programs, in agriculture, any different department I could think of that wanted to start teaching wine classes. That here I was, I've got two college degrees plus college education on top of that, and teach the science of viticulture, how the plants grow, why they are what they are, how to harvest them, selling, the business side of wine. And after, it took a little while, but finally got Cuyamaca College. Cuyamaca had actually called Steve at Napa College 2 weeks before I did and asked him if he knew of anybody that could teach down here. So when I called Steve, not only did he say it's a good idea, but he said, hold on a minute, let me dig up this email or phone call or whatever, and he put me in touch with Cuyamaca, and I got in touch with them and put together a proposal. It took about five or six proposals to finally hit the right one, what the right match between what the continuing education program was all about, or what they needed from an instructor and what I could teach.
Right, and so you've taught a couple classes out there now. Your current program is about how to obtain boutique winery licensure and the bylaws and in-laws and legalization of all those different steps. Amazing stuff. What do you got planned for this upcoming fall? What's your next class?
We're going to teach two classes in the fall semester here at Cuyamaca. One is going to be Wines of the World. Grab your passport. We're not going to be tasting, unfortunately, but we will be teaching people how to look at a French wine label, a Spanish wine, you know, Italian wine, how to look at it, how to read the label, how to understand what it is and compare it to a California wine. And then the second half of the fall session, I'm going to teach the business class again that I'm finishing up right now. It's called Creating a Successful Winery Business.
Nice.
And this class touches on federal law, state and local law, the county ordinance for having a tasting room. Touches on sales and marketing, using the internet a little bit, and some accounting issues. So it's an all-around general purpose class, what's involved in being in the wine industry, what it takes to get started, and where to go.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Don Rutkoff. From all of us here at East County Magazine Live and Manus Vineyards, thanks for tuning in today. Don, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate the interview.
You've been listening to Vines and Wines with Greg Manus, proprietor of the Manus Vineyards Estate. Visit the website at manusvineyards.com.
An Amera Media production.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.